Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Badlands Podcast, the only podcast out there that is 100% chiseled and is proudly part of the Chairshot Media Group. I am Mags, and with me, as always, my podcast wife and the Stop Cube extraordinaire, Mr. Paul Toller. Paul, how are you?
I'm fuming, mate.
What are you fuming about? The revelations that have happened pre-recording.
This is just a setup from the start, I can tell. What happened was the last time we did Badlands Tag Team, we had Ricky and Clive on, and they had my back throughout. Mm-hmm. I think it must be like Celtic Brotherhood. So now you've brought the Northern Powerhouse on. And I can tell from the pre-chat, I'm just in for it tonight.
But to be fair, both these guys like you way more than they like me. They both side with you. You just kind of ruin it for yourself with your horrific food takes and your questionable antics in parks.
I'm impossible to maintain support for.
Yeah, you're literally the Tory government. You get all the goodwill and then you just wreck it for yourself. But we may as well introduce the two guys who we're speaking about. Both absolutely just brilliant to talk with on wrestling Twitter. We've got Dan Griffin and we've got UTT Rob. How are you two guys?
Not too bad, Sam Mags. How about yourself? Doing good?
Yeah, I'm okay. I was excited about this topic. I think it's going to be maybe the hardest editing I've ever had to do. But yeah, I'm doing really, really well.
Yeah, sorry about that pre-intro.
And Rob?
I'm doing good, and all I can say is I'm going to be staying away from the park for a long time after the pre-intro.
I don't think we'll even need to explain what's going on. If you're really desperate to know, listeners, go and check out @5Nerds. Go for a bit of an explanation of what Tolly's been up to, and just know that we're all disgusted in him.
Allegedly,
that's the button. I'm going to edit that allegedly out.
I don't even know what's been said about me. That's the scary thing.
But you instantly know it's probably true. But guys, you two have both been on the show before. You are you're regulars to Badlands, so you can't add to our collated Mount Rushmore of the greatest wrestlers. So I thought we'd change tack a little bit for an opener and go with the greatest referees of all time. So we'll all come up with a Mount Rushmore and a little bit of explanation why each one makes the cut. Guests can go first. So seeing as you two are a tag team. You can decide between yourself who goes first, who goes second.
We should have probably talked about this before, Andy, Rob.
You know how tag teaming works. You talk about it in the corner.
Yeah.
And then we're just
trying to act like we've not strategized, that's all.
I can see you pushing Rob away into the corner there.
Yeah, I've got this.
Yeah, I'll go first, and you can go first for the bit later on if you like.
The plucky young lion wants in.
Yeah. I think I'm the youngest one on this recording, to be fair. Is that right, boys? Just throw that out there.
I dare say I'm the oldest. I look the oldest. I feel the oldest.
I think I just shared you, Mags. Literally just.
So I'm the Tanhashi and you're the Tenzan.
You're
difficult. The Nagata.
And Tolly's Yoshihashi.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely prone to falling on my face.
Wow.
Right, okay, referees. Sorry, it's not like I was setting up for a speech, and I'm not. I've just got something in my throat. My first pick is a guy who refereed for 30 years, one of the longest sort of tenured referees I could find. Started out in Georgia Championship Wrestling and Jim Crockett Promotions, right through WCW to WWE. It's Nick Patrick.
Great pick.
It was. So I've got my next three picks first, and then I was down to two. I was down to Nick Patrick and Earl Hebner. But quite frankly, fuck Earl Hebner because he screwed Brett over and proceeded to milk that shit for the, well, until present day. So, yeah, Nick Patrick got in. He was the official ref of the NWO, as we all know. He refereed all the matches on Sold Out, which, to my knowledge, is the only referee, at least in the US, to go solo on a pay-per-view. And, yeah, just in for his longevity, really.
Solid pick. He's not on my list, but he's a very, very good referee.
Do you want to do one each, Rob? Or?
Yeah, that's fine. I did consider Nick Patrick. I did think about it for a long time. So my first one is somebody who started out in Georgia Championship Wrestling. Went through WCW, went to WWE, feuded with Nick Patrick during the invasion because it's Earl Hebner. So we've gone the exact... opposite way on that one.
Fuck him.
I mean, he was there for Hogan and Andre with the Dave Hebner twin brother switch sort of thing. Yes, he had the Montreal Screwjob, and yes, he did milk it because he did it again in TNA with AJ Styles and Kurt Angle. So he did the Screwjob yet again. He even had a romance angle with Madison Rain in TNA where he was letting her win because he thought they were in a relationship, although she was just using him. Went on to be a TNA Hall of Famer. Just an all-round legend, really. He's even doing AEW pay-per-views now. So, I had to get him in there, and just because he's Nick Patrick's rival, that's worked perfectly.
Almost like we know each other, innit, Rob? It's weird.
None of the others are going to carry up. That's it now.
No, probably not. For my next pick, I'm going across to Japan. And again, for longevity and a few bits I'll get to it, say Tiger Hattori. He refereed, albeit some of it part-time towards the end, for 38 years. He was actually university Greco-Roman wrestling champion. Mm-hmm. Brought to the US by Hiro Matsuda to work as a trainer in the fundamentals of pro wrestling. Actually had a hand in training Hulk Hogan after, I believe it was Hiro Matsuda broke Hogan's leg and he came back. Mm-hmm. He was a manager for Masa Saito and Killer Khan in the territories. He did work briefly for Bill Watts, worked his way up to be the head ref of New Japan. Followed Ricky Choshu around a little bit, but he's refereed some of the most high-profile matches in New Japan. I actually had the fortune of seeing him referee. One of his final, was definitely his final match in Britain, but one of his final matches was Rampage Brown versus Ishii. For WCPW, they brought him across just to referee that match.
Wow!
Oh wow!
So yeah, Tiger Tor is my next pick.
It's a solid pick. It's on my list.
So I think we have talked pre-show about this with ones where you could have gone one way or the other because I've gone for Red Shoes. So that's the other side of that coin too. So we started out in SWS, did War, did All Japan, New Japan. He chose the name as a tribute to Red Shoes Duggan, who was an American referee. I don't know if anyone's heard of him.
Well, nope.
Assuming it's not Hacksaw Jim Duggan with red shoes on. But,
I thought it because he had an affinity in just wearing red shoes.
And nothing else.
Well, but he sometimes wears a red belt as well, so it's not just shoes. Had a 20th anniversary show for New Japan that they organised for him. He's an absolute bump machine, sort of always getting knocked over when he fights back with the wrestlers quite comically. Just you know, famous things like that stunner he took from Tama Tonga. You know, he absolutely felt like a pack of spuds. It's brilliant. But yeah, it's funny. As I say, I can't imagine the next two are going to be this well matched, but going well so far.
Yeah, well, my next one is, sorry, it's partially longevity, but also because he's done everything in wrestling, including have the odd match. Obviously, he's not, you know, he's not a wrestler, but it's Teddy Long. He started out as an errand boy in Jim Crockett Promotions. It went up through being ring crew and came in as a referee. His first major match was in 1989 when he was actually a replacement for the original referee for Steamboat versus Flair at the Chi-Town Rumble. Then he became a heel after that, went on to be a manager throughout WCW. He was also a DJ on the road for Kevin Sullivan and Eddie Gilbert, which is how they actually ended up putting him into that more prominent manager's role. Refed in WWE from 98 to 2002, went back to being a heel manager, and he was also just one of the best GMs I think they've probably ever had. Tag Team Teddy, getting people to go one-on-one with The Undertaker. Just absolutely love the bloke, just full of personality. Yeah, he's fantastic.
That's a great pick.
Yeah, this one isn't going to match up to Teddy Long. with him at all. So my next pick started wrestling in the 1950s with his two brothers, Max and Shirley. It's Brian Crabtree of World of Sport fame. He actually got injured in a trios match with the other two, so maybe they could have made the next section, but he decided that referees work every night and don't have to take any bumps, so he thought that'd be a better career move. So in the 1970s, when his brother Max became the main booker creative force behind World of Sport, he brought in Brian to be the referee slash ring announcer, depending on the show, and he brought in Shirley as Big Daddy to be the main face of the company. So between them, there were the booking power, the face of the company, the referee slash announcer. You know, they had sort of all the bases covered. He refereed at all of the big Wembley shows they did in the early 80s, that kind of thing. Just sort of iconic in terms of what he did for British wrestling and, you know, the sort of the stranglehold that family had on wrestling at the time.
That's some McMahon-style booking there. Yeah, we got another great pick, though.
That is the most Rob pick that there could possibly be. I thought you'd have saved that for last, to be honest, mate.
Oh, you're going to love the last one. The last most Rob pick.
Is it Aubrey Edwards?
No.
Your favourite referee?
If we're talking about people who, if they were given some table tennis rackets, could marshal a plane into the landing thing. I mean, to be fair, I feel a bit guilty about doing best refs because I kind of like it when a ref doesn't make themselves noticed. Like if a ref hasn't become the centre of attention, unless they're going to be in a feud like, you know, Nick Patrick was or whatever. I think they've done a good job if you can't remember them. I can't watch an Aubrey Edwards match without being distracted by the crazy flailing arms. She's like a Bailey buddy, but in real life. And the other thing that really annoys me, she wears red lipstick when it's an important match. So that implies that all the matches when she doesn't wear red lipstick aren't important. So if she doesn't care, why should I? And that is killing the business.
Oh, I knew I'd put
50p in the dickhead with that one.
Just your last pick has to be Aubrey Edwards now.
Nah, it's not. It's not. I've gone for... It was my favourite referee growing up, and I was never quite sure why. But the more I learnt about the bloke over the years, I just liked him more and more, because he had a bit of a baptism of fire into wrestling. And it's Tim White. He started reffing part-time in 1985. He was Andre's agent, obviously, you know, his best friend. So you can imagine some of the shit that man's seen and participated in, the drinking sessions and all that. He went full-time in 1993, refereed for another 9 years full-time. He was the referee for the infamous Hell in a Cell between Undertaker and Mankind. sadly, he was injured in 2002 during the Triple H Jericho Hell in a Cell match. Actually, watch that back. He takes a bump off the apron into the cell and down to the floor, and it's just he goes down like a sack of spuds, like, but not in a good way, like Red Shoes. He just really just clatters into the floor. He returned briefly in 2004, WrestleMania 20, to referee Jericho Christian, but he re-injured his shoulder. Maybe not remarkable for some, as I say, just when I was a kid, I just always remember him being there. And I think there was the referee sort of rebellion in, I think it was either the late 90s or the early 2000s. This has actually only just come back to me now, so it's all off the top of my head. And I always remember him being sort of very prominent in that, along with Earl Hebner. That could be right or wrong. I was a kid. I don't know. But on researching Tim White, I went down a bit of a YouTube rabbit hole, because he did a thing at Armageddon 2005.
Which, and I don't know if you guys remember this. And his map was picked.
Right.
And it's literally because of this what you're going to go into.
The segment in 2005 was Josh Matthews was there in all his ill-fitting suit, frosted tip, floppy-haired glory, trying to interview Tim White because the Hell in a Cell had ruined Tim White's career. They're in his bar, the friendly tap. And Tim's just not responding to him. He's just sat there. He's pounding shots. He's drinking a beer. And then he gets a shotgun out from under the bar, goes into it saying how much he hates the Hell in a Cell, ruined his life. He's gone down such a rabbit hole, alienated all his friends and family. Then he walks off screen and you hear a gunshot implying that he'd committed suicide. I think it was the next SmackDown or a couple of weeks later, they said, oh no, he just shot himself in the foot.
Yep.
And they did another segment where Tim White then tried to hang himself. This became a WWE.com skit every week called the Lunchtime Suicide.
Bloody hell.
It was 16 weeks. He'd been interviewed by Matthews every week and saying, oh, yeah, I've come to see how he's getting along, blah, blah, blah. And he'd try and kill himself in a different way every week. And I noted down just a few. He obviously tried to hang himself. He had a toaster in a bathtub. He slit his wrists, which was complete with sound effects and ketchup blood. He chained a brick around his neck and tried to drown himself in a fish tank. He tried to intentionally give himself mad cow disease in a laboratory where he just drank it. It just said mad cow disease on it. It started frothing at the mouth and all of this bullshit. He strangled himself while on the phone to Matthews, who was at the headquarters of a suicide hotline. He chucked himself into an industrial-sized fan, coating Matthews in what looked like chunky marinara sauce. He got shot in the head by an assassin that he paid off. It was just absolutely fucking insane. And looking back on it now, in such bad taste. But you just got Matthews watching him do all this horrible shit. Just going, oh, Mr. White, that's not wise. That's not wise. That's not wise. And it ended with Tim White hosting a celebration of friendship for Matthews and all the WWE.com viewers in his bar. And it ended with Tim White murdering Josh Matthews with the shotgun that he initially failed to kill himself with.
The best way to end it.
Long-term booking.
Well, it was 16 weeks, so it's longer than any current WWE angle.
The best one of those for me was when he tried to eat the rat poison and fell over in his chair.
He fell over backwards, didn't he?
Yeah. No, that's a great pick. And for that exact reason is why it's going to be my first pick. But we'll let Rob finish off his Mount Rushmore.
I don't know how I can follow that. It's like, it's completely blown me out of the water.
Pick Aubrey Edwards. That's the best way to follow it.
Aubrey Edwards, yeah, she was brilliant, yeah. So my next pick is El Hijo del Torrantes, which translated is the son of suspenders, and he wears suspenders just like his father did. He's a referee in AAA. Started out as a wrestler, but in 97 he transitioned into being a referee. Nominally, he's a technico, which is sort of the lucha libre for face. But he can sort of be persuaded to the rudo side, depending on the match. He's had famous rivalries with Abismo Negro, a really famous rivalry with Fabio Apache, which is quite interesting because it's like this intergender rivalry. So you've got the referee against sort of the famous female wrestler, although intergender is a lot more popular in Mexico. First happened when he... caused her to lose at Triple Mania 18 in 2010. The rivalry is still going on now. They had a match in 2019, again, that he lost at Venero del Escrado. It's just storytelling in AAA moves at a glacial pace at the best of times, but just the fact that they've managed to string this out for nearly 10 years and whenever he referees a match that involves her is cheating and then he'll just referee another match normally just because he's that biased. So I think it's absolutely great. And the way that the story only appears when there needs to be a story, the rest of the time he just fades into the background, which again was what I was getting to earlier. So I'll only make a point of being there when there's a point.
Yeah.
Otherwise, just play, you know, don't get noticed.
I mean, I don't know anything about that referee, but it does sound like quite a character. Son of Suspenders, did you say his name was?
That's what it translates to, yeah.
I can't say it's a good or a bad pick. It's a pick. I don't know anything about him. But four very unique Mount Rushmores there. I'll go first on ours then, Paul, if you don't mind, seeing as Rob's pretty, seeing as Dan's pretty much said everything about mine. I'm going for Tim White. I think kind of like the same way of Rob's view, that referees are the best when they kind of fade into the background until there is a need for the storyline. And Tim White was that kind of referee. You didn't really hear of him getting involved in the matches in any kind of impartial way. But yeah, it was all about the Lunchtime Suicides for me. It was absolutely just brilliant. I remember watching them when they came out and then going back and re-watching them again recently. It's just comically stupid. So yeah, I'm going to go with Tim White for my first pick.
I didn't even know they existed until like this until last week.
Did you not?
No, bypassed me completely. And I just spent however long it was, because only a couple of minutes each, just sat there going, yeah, what the fuck is this?
But they get more and more surreal as you go along as well.
Yeah, well, it shits all over Kevin Owens and Jericho's Festival of Friendship, doesn't it?
So, Paul, who's your first pick of the best referees?
I feel woefully unprepared compared to you three. I thought this was like a little amuse-bouche.
You're just going to say the name, aren't you? Just say a name.
Yeah. Earl Hebner was my first one. Just because he kind of all the big wrestling memories I have, he seemed to be there. So I had to pick him.
It's a solid pick. And he's my second pick. Earl Hebner was on mine as well. And it's for all the reasons that you eloquently just put then, Paul, and all the ones that Rob covered earlier. But I think for me, the main reason why I picked Earl Hebner is because of how much of a grifter him and his brother were. The fact that they got fired from WWE for selling knockoff merchandise, that's just absolutely quality. And just, they had to go on the list just for that.
So he's a criminal as well as a bastard.
And he did help screw Brett, which is good in his favour, I suppose.
were they selling any of those meat-warming slippers?
Oh, not slippers, trainers.
Sorry, trainers. Sneakers.
We will get to them, don't you worry about that. That's all a right. Whole other show.
Number two, Red Shoes Uno. Because I just love that you can basically murder someone before you even get disqualified by Red Shoes Uno. I think that's great.
Yeah, and he's so charismatic as well. He's a great referee. He didn't make my list. But my third is another one that's already been mentioned, Tiger Hattori. The fact that he got a farewell tour just shows the kind of the influence and the respect that they have for him over in New Japan. And like Dan said, he kind of travelled the world following Ricky Choshu around. Now I believe he's the foreign liaison officer for New Japan. So, yeah, my third pick's Tiger Hattori.
Good pick.
Thank you.
My third pick, like Dan, is Teddy Long. Just because because basically what he did after refereeing, he really kind of made another career after refereeing, and And he's very charismatic and like Dan said, a very good GM.
Yep, another great pick. I'm going to actually finish with one that's not been mentioned, and I'm actually surprised with the kind of knowledge of wrestling that we four have. I'm surprised he hasn't been mentioned before now. Charles Robinson, I'm going to go with. Obviously, Little Nate idolised Ric Flair as he was growing up, kind of wanted to emulate Tommy Young in his kind of refereeing style. Obviously, went to WCW. After, apparently tried to repeatedly to get a job there and was turned down multiple times. But he actually signed in 1997 for them. In 1999, he was the official heel referee of the Four Horsemen, which led to him living his dream of working with his hero, Ric Flair. And that kind of angered like the faces, especially like Randy Savage, who ended up getting suspended by Ric Flair, who was acting as president then. And he proposed a match between Charles Robinson and Gorgeous George with Randy's reinstatement on the line. So that's where we got the debut of Little Nate, where he came out in the robe and he was doing all his hero's mannerisms. Going into his WWE career, kind of transitioned over with the invasion angle, and he was Nick Patrick's understudy in the Clash of the Referees. And then in his time in WWE, he's refereed pretty much a who's who of big matches. Refereed Ric Flair at WrestleMania 24, World Heavyweight Title matches at Manias 22, 23 and 24, ref the main event of WrestleMania 26 when Undertaker retired Shawn Michaels. So the guy has literally done it all, and he's also took a lot of injuries in the ring as well. He's dislocated his elbow, nearly had his thumb chopped off, broke multiple fingers and tore a muscle in his foot. So yeah, I'm going to go with Little Nate's Charles Robinson to round my list off.
But he's never intentionally contracted mad cow disease.
Oh, shot Josh Matthews.
That's always getting your brownie points, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. When you've got your own bar called the Friendly Tap, you're instantly the best referee that ever lived.
I'd love to go to that bar, if it still exists.
I have no idea. So, yeah, my last pick is Charles Robinson.
Okay, and my last pick is Mike Chioda, because I saw, I think, Chris Jericho tweet last week that Mike Chioda was the best referee in the world. So I thought he must be all right.
You're really going to trust Jericho's opinion after he's been liking Trump tweets and playing COVID festivals?
Fair play. yeah, I didn't have a fourth pick, so I saw that and thought, well, yeah, that'll do.
Wow. And you are the co-host of the show, and you come with the least preparation. Brilliant.
I've never sat down to watch a good... I never, like, buy a pay-per-view and think, well, I'm going to watch some really good refereeing, yeah?
That's fair, but you knew the topic. You could have, like, looked into the careers of these referees.
I know. I put all my effort in my trios.
Okay, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. I think my internet's breaking up.
We'll get three sentences instead of one.
Right, then let's test Paul's theory that he's put loads of effort into his trios. Let's get on with the main topic. So, guys, let's go with you first. Who's going first to complete your Mount Rushmore of the greatest wrestling trios? And it is very, very loose for context. We've had a lot of discussion in the pre DMs. About how strict the rulings are. So basically, it's any group that's known as a threesome. They could have had more members. It doesn't really matter. As long as there were three of them at one time or another, that's the general rule.
It's on you then, Rob.
Right, so I've been teasing you all in the DMs that I was going to go for a team that was famous for a run in WCW, that liked to sing, that liked to dance, that had a questionable fourth member that people like to forget. So I'm going to go with the Fabulous Freebirds. They obviously the epitome of trios wrestling, the Freebirds rule. The Fabulous Freebirds version I'm going with is Michael PFA's Buddy Roberts and Terry Gordy. I'm going to ignore Bad Street in the WCW incarnation to count as the three. Obviously, as I say, the Freebird rule. They are supposedly the team that got pop music or whatever as an entrance theme first. It'd only ever been classical music before with Leonard Skinner's Freebird, which isn't true, actually, because Big Daddy had the Seekers' We Shall Not Be Moved before they had that. So that's another win for British wrestling. But it's a close second. It's a close second. Big Daddy actually recorded a version of his theme, which the Freebirds did as well with Bad Street USA. So there's a lot of crossover. They had famous rivalries in WCCW with the Von Erichs, with the Road Warriors in the AWA. And they were in the opening scene in present day in Highlander. There was a match supposedly at Madison Square Garden, although I don't think it was actually filmed there, against Greg Gagne, the Tonga Kid, and Jumping Jim Bronzel. So they made a little bit of a crossover into the mainstream as well. So yeah, I'm going with the Fabulous Freebirds.
Fair enough. I'll save my veto. I had one all lined up for three count. Oh dear me!
What are you going to do if his next pick isn't a three count?
I'll enjoy the rest of my day. Yeah, I can't fault the Freebirds. I've not seen much of them myself. To be perfectly honest, I've gone back, watched a few bits. I know them by reputation. But yeah, can't fault it.
Yeah, it's a great pick. Tolly, it's your turn first.
Yeah. Well, Rob set me up a little bit here because there's a link with Michael Hayes in mine, because I'm going for Team Extreme, the Matt and Jeff Hardy and Lita. One of the main reasons is they were just kind of one of my favorite things to watch when I was growing up. Obviously, the Hardy Boys came into WWE in 1998, started out jobbing in their plaid tights. Then they got picked up by Michael Hayes as their manager and actually won their first tag team championships under him. Then they went on to the New Brood, and the Brood could arguably be in the running for the trios here. They replaced Edge and Christian as Gangrel's disciples, which put them kind of in a long kind of career feud, if you like, with Edge and Christian. In that feud, the Hardys won the Terry Invitational Tournament, earning the services of Five Nerds Go favorite Terry Runnels, and she got a mention in our pre-show. And so by the end of 1999, the Hardys had already been in like three successful trios with Michael Hayes, with Gangrel, with Terry Runnels. They'd won tag team titles. They'd start carving out a good reputation for themselves. But I think it was when Lita joined them to form Team Extreme, I think that really took them to the next level. I think they were just revolutionary in WWE, really. They revolutionized the WWE tag team division, and Lita revolutionized the WWE women's division. They had, they always exciting. They had unique wrestling style, as well as unique kind of dress style, capable of things that we'd never really seen in WWE before. And like I said, with the Hardys, along with Edge and Christian and Dudley, has made the tag division kind of must see. Pioneered new match types like TLC, Lita main evented Raw with Trish Stratus and Stephanie McMahon, kind of putting the women's division on the map for a little bit. And kind of she showed she could mix it up with the men too, kind of getting involved in the TLCs, competing in intergender tag matches, and she fought Dean Malenko for the light heavyweight championship. I think Lita really kind of offered Team Extreme and the Hardys a unique threat at that time. And Lita's a four-time women's champion, Hall of Famer. Hardys are a nine-time WWE tag team champion, won tag team championship TNA, Ring of Honor. Jeff's obviously had a massively successful solo career, and Matt's been very creative kind of tour de force as well. So I think I think they're a very unique trio, and I'd put them on my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, it's a great pick. I am tempted to veto just because you said how much you really liked them.
That's not a reason to veto.
I've got to apologise as well, Paul. I had my hands up in the air giving you the wanker sign because I thought you were going to pick the Hardys and Doc Hendricks.
That would have definitely got a veto. No, I'm going to hold off because I do like Jeff and Matt. So yeah, we'll leave them on. They can stay on.
Well, you're very kind.
I know. I'm feeling canned. So let's go to you, Dan, for your first pick on yours and Rob's Mount Rushmore.
Well, contrary to what Rob said in the pre-show DMs, I'm not going with some obscure British wrestling trio that have only ever wrestled in front of 12 people. I'm going for probably the most recognisable game-changing trio in wrestling history, and it's the NWO. Obviously, specifically Hogan, Hall and Nash. It's not something I saw live because I didn't sort of have access to WCW growing up. I was very much a WWF guy, but I've gone back, watched WCW week by week, and they really were fantastic. That was definitely the biggest single heel turn of all time when Hogan came out, bashed at the beach, revealed himself as the third man. And to be honest, obviously the invasion angle has been said multiple times, blurring the lines. Is it real? Is it fake? Is it story? Is Scott Hall actually there just fucking about, just winding people up? And even individually, they are three of the most decorated wrestlers ever. I think I've noted it down, Hogan, 7 world titles, Nash, 6 world titles, 12 tag titles across WWE, WCW, TNA, and an IC title, Scott Hall, 4 IC titles, 2 US titles, 9 tag titles across the AWA, WCW, and TNA, 1 TV title reign, USWA heavyweight champion, and it was to a point where they were regularly pelted with crap from the crowd. Natural crap, but rubbish just thrown in the ring. And that sort of magic will probably, it'll never happen again because of obviously safety concerns, etc. And that's, it's probably right, to be fair. But that level of anger and vitriol to actually have a beer or a drink that you've paid good money for to just lob it at, to despise someone so much to lob it at them. It's so bloody rare. And they were just, looking back on it, they were just absolute shitheads. There was the incident with the police being called as well, with the backstage attack, the infamous sort of Mysterio lawn dart, and the cops that were actually called from people watching it. Or was it people just passing by at Disney?
Yeah.
The angle... Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it was so different to the wrestling that was going on then. Like, you knew it was scripted, you knew it was a TV show. It was almost like, what is going to happen? Because they were booking it by the seat of the pants, and you could tell that, and it were exciting. So it's a great pick.
Yeah. Well, the angle got bloated and whatnot, and the faction got just too big for its boots, and they were trying to manufacture the invasion. But that original trio of Hogan, Hall, and Nash were just so revolutionary. And then they even got brought back, obviously, in 2001. That was what it was. But we got one of, if not the biggest WrestleMania match and moment of all time with the Clash of the Eras, which with Rock and Hogan. And even when they were brought back out of it to be in Sting's corner for the Triple H Sting match at WrestleMania 31, say what you want about that match, but how cool was it to finally see the NWO and DX, the original members, facing off?
Yeah.
So yeah, NWO.
It's a solid pick. But whether it stays on is up to Rob.
Well, I can't argue with it. I mean, I've got them on my shortlist as well. And as someone who is old enough to have watched it at the time, showing my great age, it did legitimately at the start feel like WWF were invading WCW when Scott Hall came out and cut that promo about, you know who I am sort of thing. He was sort of blurring the lines between kayfabe and reality in a way that hadn't happened before. And it was completely changed the game and completely changed the industry. And on a side note, I think the NWO had a little life hack that we could all learn from. they had it originally in the contracts that they'd get a dustbin full of beer bottles at every show. And after a couple of shows, they realised that the empties were causing them a lot of trouble because they weighed so much. So they changed the contract to cans, so they could crush them down. So that's a good lesson for life there.
Cans are the way to go. I didn't even know that about the contract. That's a cool little story there. So on to me for my first pick on our Mount Rushmore. I'm tempted to go with the pick that Rob the Fabulous Freebirds. But I'm gonna maybe keep that in my back pocket in case I need to veto Paul. I'm gonna go with Demolition, I think. Now, Demolition were originally a tag team with Bill Eder and Randy Coley, but after a few matches, Randy had to be replaced because the WWF felt he was too recognisable as Moondog Rex. So they drafted in the former Killer Khrushchev, Barry Darso, who is arguably the second best wrestler to have ever walked the face of the earth with the Repo Man. But he slotted into the role of Smash, and they would be kind of looked at as almost like a Legion of Doom Road Warriors style ripoff. But I think that's a bit unfair to them because they had totally different kind of styles. They were kind of more based on the Mad Max kind of look with the leather outfits and the studded hockey masks. And they had the face paint, obviously, that was usually some sort of combination of red, black, white, and silver. They won the tag titles at WrestleMania 4 when they beat Strikeforce and went on to hold them titles for a record 478 days, which was only just beaten in 2016 by the New Day, I think. They'd quickly get them belts back in November 1989 when they beat the Brainbusters. And then in WrestleMania 6, they did actually win the titles for the third time when they took them back off Andre and Haku, who they'd lost them to. But shortly after this match, they would form the trio that we all know when Crush was added to the team. In kayfabe terms, he was added as a way to kind of have a numbers advantage against their opponents. But it was actually in reality because Axe had developed a shellfish allergy, which had hospitalised him, and Vince wanted a third member just in case Bill was on the shelf for extended periods of time. Crush would take over Axe's position pretty much in the match, and Axe would slowly transition into being almost like a manager, but they'd still kind of use that well-known Freebird rule on when it came to defending the titles. But at SummerSlam in 1990, they lost the belts to the Hart Foundation in a 2 out of 3 falls match. But in the match, they actually started with Smash and Crush, but Axe secretly came down later on to substitute himself in behind the referee's back. But they were ultimately stopped by the Legion of Doom, who just signed with the company about a month earlier. They interfered and snuffed out the deception, and Demolition would never, ever go and recapture those titles, and they quickly dropped down the card in popularity. And then Bill would leave the company in 1990, and then unfortunately, the team would break up in 1991. Crush would obviously still have a fairly decent run in WWE afterwards, but out of the three, you'd say Barry Darso had the greatest success when he adopted the potentially the greatest gimmick that's ever been in wrestling when he was the Repo Man. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Demolition for my first pick.
And it's such a shame that a conspiracy theory of Vince McMahon and Dave Meltzer has combined to erase Repo Man's World Heavyweight Championship from history. You know, it's absolutely outrageous. And they've even got rid of Tugboat's following title reign as well. So it's just disgraceful.
It is. It still hurts. The fact that you brought it up has cut me deep, Rob.
I know we're not supposed to talk about it because, you know, we'll have targets on our backs now, but
we'll be blacklisted by the McMahons.
They'll send Tim White's assassin.
they'll make us eat rat poison.
Or drink mad cow disease.
I know you love the Repo Man. I feel bad. But how long do you say that title reign was of Demolitions?
The record one was 478 days.
But that's not a record anymore, is it?
No, they was beaten by the New Day.
So I think the New Day has to replace them.
Just use it as your second pick, then, you tosser. You don't have to veto.
I do have to veto.
Can I retroactively veto Team Extreme then?
You can't retroactively veto.
I'm not happy with this at all.
It's only the bastard.
The New Day have to go up there for me. I think they're relentlessly entertaining. This seemingly everlasting BFFs, and I hope it goes on that way forever. Formed in 2014 with not even a hint of separation since. Kind of offered a career resurgence for Kofi Kingston. He's not going to edit that out now either because I vetoed.
I'm definitely not.
A career resurgence for Kofi Kingston, which obviously ultimately resulted in a world championship. I think it gave a platform for Xavier Woods' immense creativity, and hopefully it's been the launch pad for a big career for Big E. They're 8 times tag team champions, longest title reign, beating Demolitions, so that's why they need to replace Demolitions, 483 days. And I just think I want to put them on because I think they're just the epitome of kind of grabbing the bull by the horns and just making something work. New Day famously was their own idea. They felt they were looking in from the sidelines, not getting chances to be on the card, not getting any storylines. And they got this idea to band together. And originally it was Xavier and Big E. And they convinced Kofi Kingston to join them as well. And you know, they were persistent with that idea. And even when Vince granted it, the idea didn't work originally. They had the gospel singer gimmick. Didn't work, so they kept at it. And, you know, these three guys are so creative that eventually it paid off in spades. And I think it's one of the examples alongside kind of Bray Wyatt that I think rubbishes all these stories about Vince not trusting in talent. I think he just trusts in the right talent. If they've got the right ideas, then he doesn't just trust in any old shit.
Apart from the stuff he writes,
yeah. So I just think they should be an inspiration to the locker room, that if you're kind of talented, creative, likable, then you can make it if you have good ideas. So they back themselves. They've just become a colourful, kind of loved merchandise juggernaut. I really enjoy them. I love the dancing. I love Francesca, the pancakes, bootios, unicorn horns, the kind of gyrating. New Day just rocks. So I think they've got to be on the Mount Rushmore for their longevity alone. And I hope New Day lasts forever. I hope they never go into the... they never fall into the trap of breaking them up. I think they can just be friends and stable buddies for the rest of their careers.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's a great use of the veto. I'm fucking fuming about.
That's why it's a great use of the veto.
As if you've took me, Paul, man. If you've hurt me, Paul. I don't know if I can recover from this. But yeah, they deserve to be on, just not at the expense of Demolition.
That is some top level bastardry, Paul. I'm impressed.
I know. My next pick doesn't even matter now, does it?
Since he had his COVID hiatus, he's become so political. It's unreal. He's been practicing vetoing stuff at home, I reckon.
I'm just vetoing in the mirror every day. 4 hours every morning of vetoing.
I was actually at the I was at that SummerSlam when they started off their record reign. I was me and my brother in the building the night they won it. It was incredible. We were there the next night on Raw as well when the Dudleys came back, which was a massive pop. But with both shows, if you go back and watch it on the network, this is more so for your guys' benefit than anybody listening to it. You can see me in the top left corner on some of the shots.
Really?
And I got roundly ridiculed. I can't remember if it was in those matches, because at one point, I was just sat there with my phone out, and my mates just started royally taking the piss. And you've gone around the fucking world to watch wrestling. You sat there with your phone out, you dickhead. Well, it was Big Show, Miz, and Ryback. So
that's fair enough,
understandable.
Yeah.
In the interest of fairness, though, because Dan's wanting people to point him out in the crowd on various wrestling things, there's a 4GW show from Ossett Town Hall with about 5 people in the crowd. And Dan is absolutely hanging in the corner. You can see him, and he looks, dog rough. So you need to check that out as well.
I went on my own to try and revive myself. I just needed a trip out. I was hanging out my ass.
I think I'd recommend going to see that, show than the SummerSlam one. Then
there's a video on my Twitter of me spanking a gimp at a Rise show.
Oh Jesus!
Well, that the other day.
Yeah, I recorded that.
I put it on the other day. No, it's off the it's clipped from the actual show video they put together. It's slightly less odd than Paul's park antics,
but slightly more real.
Slightly more true.
Yeah.
No, yeah. It's all allegations until you get caught in it, Tolly.
Rob hasn't been there to film me in the park, thankfully.
Oh, yeah.
The worst thing was the gimp's mum was laughing.
Yeah. I got a message off her the next day saying that she had to, because the guy who plays the gimp, he's a trainee, he's about 18, 19, and he asked, I do know his mum, it's not, this didn't just all come out of the blue, I do know these people.
Makes it better.
Makes it funnier. I got a message off her the next day saying, thanks to you, I've just had to check my son's ass for a handprint shit, Bruce. I was pissed as a fart. I'd been drinking for 3 days and it made a proper thunder crack of a noise and all. I was so proud.
Teenage gimps.
And I didn't even have to pay.
Living the dream. Wow.
Anyway.
So let's go to you guys for your next pick.
Right, so, and I mentioned this last time I was on Badlands, there seems to be a bit of a pattern. It's very male-dominated, so I think it's time to try and redress that balance a little bit. And there's been a load of women's trios lately, Team Bella, PCB, the Riot Squad, Team Bad. But in many ways, they were the answer to, and because of, the Beautiful People. Who were a stable in TNA. And again, it's a stable that sort of changed members, but the lineup I'm going for is Angelina Love, Velvet Sky, and Madison Rayne, which is kind of the classic, if not the original, lineup. They started in 2007. Within sort of 18 months, WWE was scrambling and launched Lay Cool as kind of the alternative to them. And one of the main things the Beautiful People did was they were sort of regularly getting the highest ratings on the show for TNA. They forced TNA to have more women's segments, which, is massively important to, the place of women's wrestling, and the fact that, that there was this sort of momentum that TNA brought up with their women's division that later translated into the WWE's Women's Revolution and where we see women's wrestling today. In terms of championships, among sort of the different lineups, there was a couple of TNA tag team women's championships, but Angelina Love with a 6-time knockouts champion, Madison Rayne a 5-time and Velvet Sky a 2-time, so completely dominant sort of over that division. They had feuds with kind of everyone in different guises, from Awesome Kong, Gail Kim. They ended their stable with a feud against the Dollhouse, which is kind of almost the new version that was coming up with Tyron Terrell, who was fantastic at that time. You know, famous for giving their opponents makeovers, that kind of thing. Just an absolutely brilliant faction, and a faction that brought a lot of attention to TNA and really differentiated it as a different product with something unique from WWE at the time.
Yeah, and that kind of influence that they had is still being shown in TNA now, because they still put a big focus on the women's division. So yeah, I'll think that's a great pick, but it's not up to me. It's whether Dan wants to veto.
No, it's definitely staying on. I'm really glad you picked Beautiful People, Rob. They were on my shortlist. I'm also really annoyed because I'm really fucking wishing I'd have chucked off the Freebirds now. I've been thinking about using this veto since we set this up, and now I'm not going to get to use it.
You're the only one as well, because I'm definitely going to veto this this fucker here.
I know it's coming.
I've got veto blue balls here.
Is he allowed to go back and veto the Freebirds?
No, we play by the rules.
You can slide free count in there, Dan.
You what?
You can slide free count in there.
What, veto myself? No, won't do it. But my veto for 3 count was going to be 3 MB.
Oh.
But yeah, no, I can't fault Beautiful People. They were absolutely fantastic, always entertaining. Even when they had when they had Cute Kip as well, when he was in there. I'm just really glad that you didn't make PNS and Meat. which is the way I thought you were going initially.
Oh my god, Meat. He's been brought up a couple of times on this show. That's the only wrestler I know who's wrestled with a full on like boner.
Stonk on.
Yeah.
The only one you know.
Nope, can't say that. Has Repo Man ever tagged with Boss Man?
Has Repo Man? I don't think he did.
Oh, that's a shame.
They're in kind of two different lands of employment. Because even though he was a Repo Man, he technically did steal the items. I don't think they signed contracts to say that they owed money on Macho Man's hat or anything like that.
Max, we've been through this before. He was gainfully employed. It's just like an they will take it away. Everyone's stealing. They all get upset when they take these products back. But if you can't maintain the payments, then they're going to come and take them away.
It'd be a great buddy comedy.
He was the cash converters of his time. So, Paul, what are you ponying up for me to veto?
Okay, well, I know it's getting thrown out anyway, isn't it? But I'm going to go for... Interesting, Rob says that the women don't get much attention. My first team had Lita in, and this one's got China in, because I'm going for D-Generation X.
Oh, you arsehole.
Was it yours?
No, I've not got him, but how do you veto DX?
So I'm going for the kind of original lineup once Rick Rude had left. So Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and China. Picking them because they were just game changers for WWE in their losing battle with WCW at that time, and kind of really started bringing that mainstream appeal and that cool back to WWE or WF at the time. Formed in 1997, feels like the year we talk about most on Badlands is 1997, comes up all the time. And of course they were brought in as almost a foil to the Hart Foundation, who were huge in that year as well. And they just very quickly became the embodiment of the Attitude Era, crass and juvenile and provocative. And they were like rock stars basically on the WWE show. It made a top level star out of Triple H. Obviously China broke out and she broke whole new ground kind of as a threat to any man on the roster. And obviously I think she's the only woman to win a man's title in, not a man's title, win a major title in WWE. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. With the RC.
She won the Intercontinental. I don't think anyone else has done that.
I think she was tagged on to win the world, weren't she? She was certainly like in the conversation to be the first female world champion.
Certainly rumoured. And she became a number one contender at one point, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
But I think Triple H screwed her out of it or something. And obviously, the existence of DX at that time kind of made Shawn Michaels infamous. And with the whole Montreal Screwjob that we've talked about so much, you know, group became so popular that they recruited Mike Tyson for a little bit. And I just think that initial run of D-Generation X from when Shawn Michaels won the title, when Shawn Michaels stole the title at Survivor Series 97 to losing to Austin, you're welcome, to losing to Austin at WrestleMania in 1998 was just really, really hot. And they even had a pay-per-view named after them, which is really cool. And I just think those three, when I think of D-Generation X, that is the lineup I think of, those three. But it did lay the foundations. Oh, knocked my fucking headset off. I'm getting so excited. It laid the foundations for kind of all the iterations of D-Generation X that followed. And obviously Shawn Michaels left after that WrestleMania match, and Triple H was rearing to go, kind of step up into that kind of main heel position. So D-Generation X.
It is hard to beat all that. But I am going to fuck you, Paul. You're not staying on.
Credibility. Credibility is flying out the window.
Well, we'll see. So I'm going to go. I mean, you spoke about the longevity of DX now. They keep coming back. And I think that kind of tarnishes the reputation that they have, because they just sometimes don't know when to quit. Well, the trio that I've got were only around for about 7 months, maybe. But they did certainly make waves. So going back to October of 2002, a young Shelton Benjamin and a young Charlie Haas started working their way up the card in house shows. They actually made their TV debut on the Boxing Day edition of SmackDown of 2002, when they were introduced by Paul Heyman as a gift to his top client, Kurt Angle, and they were called Team Angle. They quickly got involved in a storyline with Benoit and Edge, and defeated them in late January of 2003 to become the number one contenders for the tag titles. And then the following week, on February 6th, they actually won the titles by beating the Los Guerreros. They continued this rival with Benoit when they faced him and Brock at No Way Out in a handicap match, and that's when they teamed with Angle for the first time. They lost that match, but they successfully defended their tag titles against Los Guerreros and Benoit and Rano at WrestleMania 19. But they eventually lost those belts to Eddie Guerrero and Tajiri. That was at Judgment Day. And then shortly after this, Angle's confronted Benjamin and Haas and complained about how they'd been on a bit of a losing streak. And they blamed him for them losing the tag titles, and they began to question his leadership. So he fired them from Team Angle, so Team Angle was no more. But they continued the storyline for a few weeks, and they both ended up wrestling Angle in singles matches and then also in tag matches. Now, Angle obviously went on to be one of the most successful wrestlers in WWE and in TNA. And the world's greatest tag team, as they would be known after that, would find success both in and out of WWE. And Shelton's still going today as part of the Hurt Business. So, yeah, I'm going to replace DX with Team Angle.
Just repeat that again.
I'm going to replace...
With a straight face.
I can't, but you took off Demolition and Repo Man, so it's happening. Team Angle is better than DX.
Shambolic. I can't do anything about it. It's shambolic.
I'm not even going to stand up for you, Mags.
You reap what you sow, Mr. Tully.
There's a legitimate argument for replacing Demolition with the New Day.
Tumbleweeds.
Just a poor man's main event mafia, wasn't it?
Oh, that's a That's a classy take.
What a faction.
Mayhem and Matthew were actually really... I enjoyed Mayhem. I mean, they booked themselves so that they were the absolute best and they kind of held a lot of people back. But I loved Mayhem and Matthew.
Oh, I thought they were great. Especially the start of the theme chart, so...
I've signed up for Impact Plus, so I'm going to go back and watch all that. Because I only saw that when it aired on Bravo about 6 weeks late and never in order.
Yeah.
They had some really good stables in TNA at that time. I mean, they've always had really good stables, actually.
Team Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my fourth pick, my final pick for us, which I can see probably getting vetoed off. Rob's got a real glint in his eye and a shit-eating grin. But I'm sticking with TNA for my pick, and I'm going with Dick A.
Great pick, yeah.
Yeah, Abyss, one of probably the best big man to never wrestle for WWE. Hell of a character all throughout his time in TNA. Him and his brother, Joseph, obviously did really well. Crazy Steve, I've spoken on this program before about my respect for him and how much I enjoy his work. Love the face paint, the little monkey's got the horn, everything. It's just batshit mental and absolutely love it. And for me, Rosemary is one of the best characters to come through Impact, full stop. She's just fantastic, but it kind of sticks with my underlying sort of theme with the NWO, in that they've sort of revolutionized the wrestling business in a way. It's the broken hardy stuff, the Delete or Decay, the tag team being part of the tag team Apocalypto. That, when it was going on, was unlike anything any of us had ever seen. And it just absolutely hooked me in. The whole thing was just brilliant. And it was oddly prescient in that, obviously, this day and age, a lot of companies have had to go cinematic with how they film various bits and pieces just to keep going. Also, with that, there were TNA tag champions only once, which I found amazing, because their feud with the Wolves just seemed to go on forever and ever. I thought they traded it back and forth. But they haven't. Rosemary obviously became the knockout champion during the time they were together as well. But none of them were ever afraid to mix it up in the hardcore matches, like I say, in the batshit mental cinematic matches. And I think we will see going forward. It's waned a little bit now, but I think we will have to see going forward a much more cinematic style, and none of that would have quite hit the heights it has without Dick A.
It's a great pick. And the story you mentioned on the last time around Badlands about Crazy Steve being legitimately blind, that was something I'd never heard of. And then after you brought it up, it got picked up by like mainstream media, and like you were hearing Cultaholic and What Culture like talk about how it came out. It was blind. So you kind of like scooped that story like months before it dropped.
It's almost like I'm one of the few people who follows wrestling that actually has a journalism degree.
Yeah. So you didn't my appearance on Wrestling with Statistics when I told that story a month before.
Wow.
So only because you heard it from me.
I was stood next to you, Dan.
Yeah, but I was closer, so I heard it first. by about 6 inches.
No, that's an excellent pick, and I'm kind of gutted because I was all ready to say, that pick makes you a clown, and I'm going to veto it with Psycho Circus, but I can't even do that now, which is a staple of clowns in Mexico. Absolutely agree. Decay was amazing. One of the things that I was really sad about was that we never got a corporate Decay, because we had Abyss doing his Joseph Parks looking for his brother, his brother Chris, Abyss, which was just absolutely brilliant. And obviously you had the sort of time when Kane was doing sort of the corporate side, and Corporate Kane and Monster Kane, and I think it would have been absolutely brilliant, I think, if you'd have put Rosemary and Crazy Steve in suits at the time and have them sort of as the general managers of Impact. But aside from that, just on Rosemary, I'd be really interested in your opinion on this, Mags, or maybe even Karloff's opinion. What do you think to the Rosemary Sexy Star move in AAA when supposedly Sexy Star broke her arm?
I haven't seen it, but I saw the Twitter backlash about it when it happened. And yeah, if it was legitimate that Sexy Star attempted to hurt Rosemary on purpose, that's a scummy move.
Well, I mean, the reason I ask is that in a Judy Gatami, you'd normally try and go to the side to break the arm, and she was going up and down, which makes me think it's a work, but I'm a conspiracy theory who believes everything in wrestling is a work, so I don't know. But it isn't the way that you would have tried to break someone's arm.
No.
That makes sense. But I'd be interested in your son's opinion, though, because obviously he knows a lot more than me, and
certainly a lot more than me. I'll find a clip of it and show him, and we'll discuss it.
Did it affect Sexy Star's career at all?
Well, she was transitioning to MMA, so I think she was going to leave wrestling at the time anyway, and then it sort of gave her this image of this, you know, hard person who was going to go and break the rules. So it just seemed a little bit too convenient at the time.
Convenient, and put more eyes on Rosemary as well.
As a way out of the sport.
Yeah, but as I say, you know, it's one of these things with wrestling. You're sort of so conditioned to think everything's a work that when things are really like, nah, that's a work, you know. So got my tinfoil hat on, but that's just...
Well, she certainly has transitioned into MMA. She's got a 5-0 record, so she's unbeaten in MMA.
Well, it's probably because they're scared of her, because they think...
She's going to break me arm.
Because she beat a demon in a fight.
Yeah. See, if it had been corporate Rosemary, then no one would have cared. But
going back to that, Rosemary did play the sort of the multiverse angle. Though I've not actually seen it. I've seen snippets of it. The sort of web series she did with Ali, you know, into the multiverse, and she even set up multiple Twitter accounts for Rosemary, for Courtney Rush. I think there was a couple of other characters she played as well. She's sort of leaned into that. And I just want to throw it out there again, because going back to the cinematic stuff, I bloody loved Wrestle House. I don't know if any of you guys have seen it.
I've seen it. So much good things about it. I just haven't seen any episodes of it yet.
Just look at it. Same as I said when I was on previously, it is just completely daft, but just... Full on joy when Triple XL and the Deaners are getting into a fight because the Deaners think that Triple XL drank their beer, and it includes Cody Deaner using a pedal bin to smack AC Romero in the bollocks,
and Larry
D. Pedal to flip it up,
yeah. So the bin lid straight into the daddy bags.
And Larry D's got his irresistible aftershave ring rust.
Yeah. But he's had a spell put on him by Rosemary to become all suave and sophisticated to make Johnny Bravo jealous. So he calls himself Lawrence D and starts just dressing in like flowery shirts with big collars and shit and slicking his hair back.
Yeah, I'm going to have to catch some of it because, yeah, I've heard so much good stuff about it.
Put Crazy Steve in a blindfold match with Johnny Swinger. Because Swinger accidentally threw powder in his eyes and Steve was rolling around. I was going, I'm blind. And Tommy Dreamer leans in. She goes, Steve, you're blind anyway. He's like, yeah, but you don't know that.
Johnny Swinger was telling everyone that you're allowed to throw powder in people's eyes if you shouted Fuji first.
Right, let's round ours off, Paul. I've got a couple left to go from, but I think to add a little bit of legitimacy to ours after the woeful vetoes, I'm gonna have to bookend the show. I'm gonna have to go with the Fabulous Freebirds. You can't have a Mount Rushmore of trios without it being they were the guys that brought trios to the forefront. Rob waxed lyrical about them, obviously. But yeah, they have to go on. It's as simple as that. They've had legendary feuds with the Von Erichs in WCCW. They went to GCW and World Championship Wrestling, and they literally just toured the Americas with, and they were just stars wherever they went. The feuds that they had in AWA were primarily with the Road Warriors, where I think they cost them the tag titles in a match against Jimmy Garvin and Steven Regal. They only had a very short run in WWE in the kind of like rock and wrestling period, and they were actually managed, or they were wrestled under the guidance, of Cyndi Lauper's manager, David Wolfe. But they left after a bit of an altercation with Andre the Giant, who went mad at him for turning up late to a show. And then after that, they went to AWA, returned to World Class, and even went to the UWF for a short run, where Gordy was actually the champion there, and Buddy Roberts held the TV title, and Hayes was the manager of the two. So yeah, I'm gonna go with the Fabulous Freebirds, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it, Paul.
It's a fine choice. I wouldn't have anyway.
Oh, but Demolition got shit canned.
Yeah, no regrets.
I do have one question for you, guys, Mags and Paul. This just occurred to me halfway through the show. On Badlands, obviously, always mention Repo Man and Big Boss Man, so they're like two parts of a Badlands faction. Who's your third? And you can't say Lou Albano.
Oh wow, what a question!
To make the Badlands triumvirate. Who's your third man?
Oof.
Who's your Hulk Hogan coming in?
Who comes up a lot?
Pepper the dog.
Pepper comes up an awful lot, yeah.
Moppy. I'd pick Moppy.
Yeah, Moppy's come up a few times.
That's a solid trio.
Yeah.
Moppy, Repo Man and Boss Man.
Three of the all-time greats.
I like it.
The official Badlands trio.
Oh, I don't think I'd go that far.
That leans into one of my honourable mentions, because I very nearly let my British bias take over, and I was going to name the British Bulldogs Dynamite Kid, British Bulldog, and Matilda.
Yep.
I very nearly went that way.
Yeah.
It would have been a good pick.
Bulldog comes up a lot, actually.
Yeah, and it gets vetoed a lot.
I do veto one of the British Bulldogs every few weeks.
You're so bad, Paul. Why do I put up with that?
Why did you start a podcast with somebody who started watching wrestling 3 weeks ago?
No, the best thing is I run the idea by him, thinking he was the perfect person to be on the podcast, and every week since I've bitterly regretted that decision. I wish I kept the idea to myself now.
I did always wonder why you approached me and what number on the list I actually was.
Yes, just going through the Rolodex.
Like, you have heard 5 minutes ago, haven't you? The unedited shambles that is 5 minutes ago.
It's like a Tony Khan tweet when he says he couldn't get the first, second, third or fourth choice.
Oh, wow.
But they're going to bring in a defender.
The grief he got about that as well.
Fucking clown.
Yeah, it was. You don't do that. The Fulham fans can't stand the Khans. Absolutely can't stand. Even after they got promotion, he was literally on the next plane over to Florida for AEW. They were absolutely fuming with him.
That and the whole Michael Jackson statue.
Yeah, that's. I don't think that was the Khans, or was that not? Al-Fayed,
wasn't it? Yeah.
No, I'm not up on my yo-yo club ownership histories.
Did you have any honourable mentions, Rob, people who just didn't make the cut?
One that I... The Shield was in there. Obviously, all three of them have gone on to great things. They were really protected when they came up, massive undefeated streak. The first time they got the comeuppance was when Jake Roberts made his return to WWE after, 20 years or something, ridiculous, and came out and had the snake going over Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose broke the record for the US title, although he never defended it. It was pretty lackluster reign, but he still sort of had it. you know, they've gone on to be the sort of top guys in WWE, and Ambrose is now in AEW. You know, they had a massive impact. The other one, and because it was like a trio that fought as a trio and won a trio championship and was the heart and soul of a trio division, I've gone for Son of Havoc, Evilise and Angelico from Lucha Underground, two-time trios champions. That they were very much the faces of that division, and they didn't actually have a tag team division in Lucha Underground. It was just the trios. So, you know, it was a lot more kind of mainstream than something like, you know, the Never open weight six men is just, you know, the three people have jammed together that week, isn't it? Yeah. No one really cares, you know, not to disparage Yoshihashi's it's about as prestigious as something as you might get off the back of a box of Frosters, you know. So
it's as prestigious as the time Midian found the European title and he was just giving it.
But there has been some great times when people have found championships, like when Eric Young found the old TNA championship belt in the bin and was going around defending it. That was absolutely classic.
I was just about to say, like the rehashing with Moose at the minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People say he didn't win that championship, but he found it fair and square, you know. But he's absolutely gone on and he's made it feel more important than the Impact's World Championship, which is kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It was
stuck in Mexico and couldn't be featured. I'm pretty sure they've had to make a new belt for Eric Young.
Yeah, but there has been great times when people have found a championship, but yeah.
I had a couple. I had obviously like DX, Team Extreme, New Day, Beautiful People on my list as well. I had a couple of veto picks, as I mentioned, which were 3MB, Mean Street Posse, and the Job Squad.
fucking Job Squad, Jesus Christ. Gilbert. If Gilbert ever makes it onto a Mount Rushmore, this show ends.
but one that I actually looked into, and I couldn't find much on them, it was it's a trio called Super Sky Team from CMLL. I don't know if Rob, if you've ever seen or heard of them.
Dan, there's two promotions in Mexico. What one takes things really seriously and one takes the piss. Which do you think I'm watching?
Piss taking.
Triple A all the way.
But the original team was Mystico, who went on to be Sin Cara, Sombra, who's now Andrade, and Volador Jr. They didn't really do much that I could find, but the second incarnation of it, they were sort of reformed in 2015. It was Mystico 2, which is Dragon Lee. Mm-hmm. Volador Jr. still in there, and somebody called Valiente. I couldn't even find any matches online when I was looking about. But they're the longest reigning CMLL Trios champions of all time. The belts have been active for like 19 years, and they held them from February 13th, 2015 to July 1st, 2018. A reign of 1,234 days.
And no matches.
I don't know how many times it was defended. But the only reign that might be longer is Black Warrior, Blue Panther and Dr. Wagner Jr. But they don't actually know when they vacated the title, so they can't verify it. So they were sort of my really sort of outlier pick. But I didn't want to do a tolly and just have like three words to say.
Well, we should veto our list and get the one with Dr. Wagner in, because you know how I feel about Dr. Wagner. Should be on anyway.
Oh, shit, I'd forgotten about that. Oh, yeah. I could have had super bollocks. I really fucked this up. I thought myself into a corner.
You could have
You're up.
I did have Psycho Circus as well that I nearly would have vetoed yours with, which are Psycho Clown, Monster Clown, and Murder Clown. And it sounds ridiculous as the clowns, but the two-time AAA Trios champions, and they went on an absolutely insane run. They were originally sort of put together to sort of beat Goldberg's undefeated streak sort of thing, and went undefeated for over 3 years. They've had mini spin-offs as well, which I don't think they'd have done that in CMLL. I don't know, maybe they would have done, but you know, there's a mini version of the faction, and Psycho Clown's gone on to be the face of AAA, so it's kind of you know, sort of massively important. There's even another clown that's been introduced called Dave the Clown, which I'm wondering if it's a little slight at someone in wrestling media, but who knows.
I wonder who that could be. Oh.
Clown in name and nature.
So speaking of Dave the Clown, I had the Elite on there, and I had the Shield.
Yeah, I had Legacy, which I was tempted to use as a veto, and I also had one that I'm surprised that they haven't been brought up, but the Colony from Chikara, the ants. Chikara's like, it was such a fun kind of promotion until it was tarnished by Quackenbush and his dalliances. But yeah, I used to really enjoy watching the Colony fight. So yeah, I would have gone with them too.
That's why I stayed away from British wrestling, to be honest.
Yeah, just the amount of nonsense.
Alleged nonsense.
Yeah, you don't want to get sued a la Joey Ryan.
It's got to have been a proven fact, like Paul masturbating at pigeons in the park.
Photographic evidence. Who would you have picked that at British wrestling, just out of interest?
I didn't even begin to think about it.
Okay.
I just thought I'm just staying away from it. The obvious one off the top of my head is British Strong Style.
Of course.
That's the obvious one. It's the only one that immediately springs to mind. Like I said, it'd end up being people who I've seen wrestle in front of about 12 people in a gym in Leeds. If I think of anything, I'll DM you, Paul. I know you'd be really interested and go and seek all the matches out and
really deep delve into his research.
Yeah. So you're saying, Dan, that Team Mega Slam doesn't count as a trio?
Fuck no. No, we'll leave that one well alone.
Well, guys, this has been brilliant. It's been as good as I thought it would be, even with the revelations of Paul and his park antics. We need a topic from you guys now. So with there being two of you, you can either argue the toss or you can give us a topic each.
I completely forgot about this bit again.
Oh, brilliant.
Giving me stick all show for my free line answers, and
you do it every week, Paul. You're here every week. I'm a guest. You are, Rob.
Do you want me to kill some time and you can think of one rather than?
Nah, you go, Rob. If you've got one locked and loaded.
Yes, I don't know if you've done this one, but I've got to thinking about it with the referee one, because there's lots of referees, like you mentioned, Teddy Long and Jim Ross and Bill Alfonso and Shane McMahon, that have gone on to be more famous doing something else than the thing they started out as. So I think it'd be really interesting to have a Mount Rushmore of people who are more famous in the second wrestling career or potentially third or fourth. Because you've got people like, you know, Bobby Heenan, who started out as a wrestler and then as a manager and then as a commentator. Arguably is more famous as a commentator, so I think that'd be an interesting one.
That's a really interesting bit. That would take Paul some real research to dig out some picks there.
I think I need a week off before that one.
I've just given five there.
I'm really glad we discussed this before the show, Rob. It's a really solid topic.
Have you got one to beat it though, Dan?
Yeah, I think I've got one that might make Paul tell me to fuck off again.
That's not the aim of the game.
No, it's the aim of my game. No, I can't do that. I've got the darts on. I was going to say the Mount Rushmore of wrestlers as darts players, but that's a bit too niche, isn't it?
That would probably only apply to like 1% of our listener base. Yeah.
Didn't one used to come out to CM Punk's music?
Yeah, Paul Nicholson. He was a right prick. No, we'll leave it at Rob's. I'm a complete failure.
Oh, he's pulled a Jess on us.
He has. He's done a Jess.
Disgraceful. He won't be invited back.
Yes, I fucking will.
Jess is not invited back?
Won't be invited back. You've had him on like a month after he was on before. It's got to be the quickest turnaround of anyone you've... There's been times when Tolly's had a bigger gap than that.
Wow. Guys, this has been brilliant. You let the Badlands listeners know where they can get hold of you guys on social media.
I'm at UTT Rob. You can follow me for ranting about Huddersfield Town's transfer policy, I follow not working, and just some general wrestling chat. I'm happy to follow back.
I'm at DanGriffin21. You can follow me there and see live tweets of wrestling and movies that are a minimum of 7 years old, because I'm chronically behind on everything, including thinking up topics.
You were talking then about Huddersfield's transfer policy. Burnley's is non-existent. It's absolutely disgusting. So I feel you there, Rob. Tolly, your favourite part of the show.
I love this part. Yeah. Well, you can. Thanks for listening, everyone. You can follow my good pal Magsy Moo over at Dej Kirkby, D-E-J Kirkby, and you can hear his lovely selection of other podcasts at various places. You've got Five Rounds Pod over at the Visionaries Global Media Network and Shooting the Sportsish. You've got Talk at the Table also at Visionaries Global Media, Radio Techers, which is at Shooting the Sportsish. It's really hard to say this one, you know, Shooting the Sportsish. I feel like it's not even really a channel. It's just been designed to fuck up my outro.
That's just a happy accident.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past you. Radio Techers, Shooting the Sportsish, and Cheershot Radio Network. And you can follow me at Rain Counter and listen to me at Five Nerds Go. And if you enjoyed this, you can listen to us every single Thursday at Cheershot Radio Network. Stay safe, everyone, and always use your head.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.